All right, the first Parsha Power back in Yeshiva with a live audience. And it's Shem, we'll grow the audience. We're doing quality now, called quantity, and it's Shem later. Now we are with Parshas Re'eh. And Re'eh is a Parsha that, after spending a week on it, I'm very excited for this particular Chabura, because as we're going to see there, I would say there's more than one theme throughout the Parsha. And I want to talk about the different themes that we find in the Parsha, and this will help us with our global perspective of understanding Parshas Re'eh and what it's contributing to Devarim and to the Torah at large. But also, I want to talk about the unity of those themes, because the themes at first glance seem different, and possibly you can make the argument that they're contradictory themes, but I don't think they are, and we'll get to that. Before doing that, I just want to give a little bit of a chazara, just of Devarim up until this point, because as we've been saying on the Parsha preview and in previous Parsha Power Chaburas, Devarim is complicated because it's one long speech, and there are a lot of moving parts to each speech, and because of that, it's hard to figure out why a Parsha was divided in the way that it was. So Devarim, we said, introduced the discussion. There was an overview. We had the bookend stories that tell us where we started and how we got here to where we are now. So that we started from leaving Har Sinai, and it went through the Chet HaMeraglim, which was the big thing that led to the Golos, and then it went all the way to the end of the 40 years of wandering, and then they got to where they were today. Then Veschanan took it from the broader view, and we went inside. So Devarim is the beginning of the speech, the overview. Veschanan took us inside to Har Sinai. We saw the bris, and we saw what the bris's ramifications would be on Klal Yisrael when they would enter Eretz Yisrael ultimately. And that was all about the bris of the past, but again, what it would mean going forward. So we had the Saras HaDivros again. And then Parshas Ekev, which was part three of that speech. So we said that the essential theme was consequences. The word Ekev means consequences. And the idea was that Moshe was teaching Klal Yisrael about the consequences of its actions and used history as a backdrop to those consequences, showing them, well, here's what happened in the Midbar when you did the Chet Egel. And we said that actually complemented Veschanan. Veschanan was about the bris, it was about Matan Torah. And in Ekev, we had the Chet Egel, which was the reversal of that. And that was the consequences of not keeping up to that bris. We spoke about the themes of Ahava and Yira. And I do think that when we get to Parshas Re'eh now, and the global aspect of Parshas Re'eh, so I would say that Re'eh continues to look forward, and we mean that literally with Re'eh, which means to see, to look forward towards a new covenant. And we'll explain exactly what we mean by that. If Eschan was telling us about the original bris between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so there is a new covenant that's being referenced in the beginning of Parshas Re'eh, and that's preparing us for the imminent future. Now there's less history. Ekev was history, Eschan was history, Devarim was history. From Re'eh and moving forward, I think I don't think there's really any more history except for Hazinu. You can come closer. Too close for comfort. We move the chair right there in the middle. So Hazinu is going to bring us back to. We're going to get some more history in Hazinu, but again, Hazinu is it's a very different recording of that history. But for the most part, the history in Sefer Devarim is finished. Devarim, Veschanan, and Ekev, that was all history. Now Re'eh is looking forward, right? And that would explain why the beginning of the Parsha says, Re'eh Anochi Nosin Lefneichem Hayom Bracha Uklala. Today, because what's happening, we're now looking forward. And that might also explain why he's saying Re'eh. He's not saying think about the past. And this is going to also help us again in understanding the different themes in Parshas Re'eh. So I want to talk a little bit about the themes, but I'm not going to be able to talk about what Re'eh is as a whole until we actually go into the Parsha and see what's in Re'eh. But just to continue to get that broader perspective of what Parshas Re'eh is. So I just mentioned that Parshas Re'eh begins with the word Re'eh, which means to see. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe actually picks up on this. But Lubavitcher Rebbe says that the Chumash transitions from, if you look throughout Sefer Devarim until this point, Veschan and Akev, the Lashon that we keep on hearing is Shema. Especially Shema, it keeps on saying Shema, and now we move into Re'eh, which is to see. So you can make what you want of that transition, but I would say just very simply, we're going now from hearing about things of the past to looking towards the future, and that's when we're getting the beginning of Re'eh. So this aspect of seeing, I think, manifests itself in a lot of places in Parshas Re'eh. So, for example, something that I just noticed this week. I might have noticed it a year ago, but I don't remember. But the beginning of the Parsha starts with Re'eh, and the very end of the Parsha has the command of Aliyah L'Regel, which the idea, and what's interesting is that the Parsha begins with Re'eh, the end of the Parsha ends with Yei Re'eh. So Re'eh is to see, Yei Re'eh is to be seen. But there's this, you know, apparently what you're supposed to be looking at and who's supposed to be looking at you. You had a very similar thing with Vayeschanan. I mentioned this in Parsha Power 2 weeks ago. I might have recorded that on my own when I sent it out. But Vayeschanan begins with the idea of chinun, of grace. And at the very end of Vayeschanan in Shvi'i, it says lo sechonim, that you shouldn't have grace for the nations of the idolaters. So it's really just interesting that we have these bookends. So we have the bookends of Re'eh. Re'eh in the beginning talks about seeing. The end of Re'eh talks about being seen. But the idea is this focus on Re'eah. Other ideas. So I think my older brother and I, Rav Daniel, we spoke about this in the past, that Re'eh also, the Lashon of Araya, like a proof to something. So we believe that it's connected to the word Re'iah, because Araya is something that you can see with your own eyes. And it's really interesting that a lot of the things that we find in Parshas Re'eh are really just visual evidence and reminders and proof of Hashem's mastery over the world. Now, I could just give some different examples of that. One example, we find the Hilchos Kashrus in Parshas Re'eh. And this is one of the typical proofs, supports to the Torah, that if you look, the Torah is able to list the animals that have the signs, the kosher signs, non-kosher signs, and only as someone as confident as a Hashem would lay out something like that. The Hilchos Shemitah, the idea that the land is going to be left fallow, and that this whole concept of Shemitah and everything is going to be okay, only Hashem can guarantee something like that. We even have warnings of other religions sprouting. The false prophet who's going to come and try to change Torah as we know it. And, you know, this is like forewarning of other religions. And Moshe says in this parsha, like, it's going to happen. Look out for it and just be ready for it. So we have like a lot of these, a lot of the halachos that we learn in Re'eh speak to this idea of these visual things that you can look at and see that they attest to Hashem's mastery over the world. So one theme I would say is this theme of Re'iah, that seeing and kind of understanding that God is the master of the world. And I'm gonna keep on coming back to this theme, the idea of Hashem's mastery over the world as Re'eh is testifying it. But the other theme, and this is a real, this makes it, this is a great follow up to the Shmooze that we just heard from Bamberger, that there's the other theme is the centrality of Yerushalayim. If you look throughout the parsha, that this is a very heavy theme. We have Ma'aser Sheni, which the Mashgiach spoke about. We have a whole emphasis on what's going to happen when you go into Yerushalayim. You're gonna destroy all the idols, and then what? Moshe Rabbeinu says you can't make bamos and serve Hashem wherever you want. You have to do it in Yerushalayim, the b'makom asher yivchar. And we have Shalosh Regalim, the Aliyah L'Regel, the very end of the parasha, which is telling us that you have to go to Yerushalayim. We have Kiddushas Bechor, and the Bechor is supposed to be eaten in Yerushalayim. There's a lot of emphasis on Yerushalayim. And the question is, is that connected to the theme of Re'iah, of Hashem's mastery over the world? Are these two separate themes? Are these themes supposed to be together? And I can ask a second question. Not only are these themes related or not, but might you say that these themes are a little bit contradictory? How are they contradictory? Maybe they don't actually have to be, but just for perspective, if Re'eh is trying to testify that Hashem is the master over the entire world, So maybe it would make more sense to allow bamos, that you can serve Hashem wherever you are in the world. Hashem owns the entire world, after all. And you could say the same thing about Shemitah. If Hashem owns the entire world, why is Shemitah only in Eretz Yisrael? If Shemitah is supposed to remind you that Hashem is the king of the entire world, so then maybe Shemitah should apply everywhere, just like Shabbos applies everywhere. So what's the idea of the centrality of Yerushalayim? So I think the idea, and we could say a lot of what the Mashgiach said earlier today, that there's this idea that there's a concentration of Yiras Hashem there, and that there's a concentration of having the greatest people there and the holiest sites happening there. And Hashem would choose a place like Yerushalayim where there were so many holy things that happened. The Akedah happened there on Har HaMoriah. So Hashem would pick if Hashem was going to have to pick a land that was concentrated with all these things, so Yerushalayim would be the place. But the question again is, okay, we understand it's a great place, but why did Hashem have to build into the system that there's one central place, there's one Makom Asher Yevchar? Where and not everywhere, and I think the simple idea, and with this we're gonna go into the specifics of the parsha. I think the idea is that Hashem, in order for you to understand that there is a Hashem, there has to be a center. There has to be a center point because the world is so multifaceted that there's so many distractions in the world. And this goes back to the Mashgiach Shmuz, that since there's so many distractions in the world, there's so many kinds of people, there's so many different cultures and forces, it's quite difficult for you to actually recognize Hashem in every aspect of the world. And you can find Hashem everywhere in the world, but there has to be one place from which it emanates. All the Kedush in the world emanates from Yerushalayim. So Hashem, yes, of course Hashem is everywhere, but there has to be a center from which it emanates. And then once we have that center, then we could be in Or LaGoyim if we are where we're supposed to be. Now, what that means is that if you don't have the fortune of being in Yerushalayim, so yeah, you have to set up a center somewhere else. But Chazal tells us that every shul is really going to be annexed, and every base measure is going to be annexed to Yerushalayim, because that otherwise, how could we justify it? Right? That's like making a bama. You know, but the idea is that there is a Makom Asher Yivchar, and we are all a part of that. But in order to understand Hashem's mastery over the world, you need a center point. I think even Sion, the word Sion, I think means a center point. You need to have a center point, and that's why Kimi Sion Teitzei Torah. The Torah emanates from that central shaft of the world. Like the menorah has a bunch of branches, but they all point to the center. Okay, now let's go into the specifics of the parsha. Let's go right in. So for the parsha, the entire parsha, I have 10 sections. We're going to elaborate on maybe three or four of them. So the first section is just the beginning, where Moshe says, "See, I'm placing before you today bracha and klala," and he's referring to the covenant that's going to take place on Har Ebal, Har Gerizim, with the curses and the blessings. And that is going to be elaborated on in Parshas Kisavo. That's three parshios from now, right? Re'eh, Shoftim, Kisete, Kisavo. So three parshios from now, the Har-Eval, Har-Grizim thing is going to be elaborated on. That doesn't actually take place in the times of the Chumash. That's going to take place when they get into Eretz Yisrael. It takes place in the time of Yehoshua. But it's referenced here, and it's elaborated on in Kisavo. So we'll have to talk about why is it being referenced here if we're not elaborating on it until Kisavo? Why are we talking about it now? So we'll put that aside just for now. But okay, so we have see that there's going to be a covenant that's going to happen on Har Ebal, Har Gerizim, and we're going to talk about it later in Kisavo. So why is it being talked about here? Okay, that's number one. Number two, when you get into Eretz Yisrael, you're going to have to destroy all the idols of all the Avodah Zarah and all the Avodah Zarah centers. Fine. Then Moshe Rabbeinu says in section 3, all the rules of slaughtering animals and karbanos. He says the karbanos have to be in Eretz Yisrael, no bamos allowed. He talks about all the halachos, or at least he referenced the idea of meat consumption, how you can do that properly. He says you have to do shechita, and he talks about how you can't eat the blood. You have to do kisvei hadam. A lot of these halachos are being repeated from Parshas Achrimos, but that aside, we have all the rules surrounding karbanos. Fine. Number four, we come back to Avodah Zarah. This section I refer to as defense against idolatry. This section has four subsections. One is, he says, don't seek out the cultures of the nations around you. And he says, don't add, don't subtract the Torah. Don't try to incorporate things into your into culture. That leads to Avodah Zarah. The next thing is the test of the false prophet, the Navi Sheker, and then the Cholim Chalom, the person who says he had a dream and he tries to change everything. He also talks about a Mesis, a missionizer, a missionary, and Ir Hanidachas. So, and these subsections are how to defend yourself against the influence of Avodah Zarah. Fine. Number five is Banim Atem LaHashem. He says, you guys are children to Hashem. No cutting yourselves. No making bald spots for the dead. He says, Yernam Kadosh, Yernam Segula. You can't do these things. That's section five. Section six is all of kashrus. We have the Isser Nevela, the Isser Buster B'chalav. We have all the kosher animals and non-kosher animals. Fine. Number seven is Meiser, mainly focuses on Meiser Sheni. There's a reference to Meiser Ani, there's a reference to Meiser Rishon, but the focus is Meiser Sheni, which the Mashgiach spoke about today. Number eight, I refer to as the laws of your money and society. There are three subsections here. The Shemitas Ksafim, all the idea of loans. You're supposed to forego loans during Shemitah. Also, he says they talk about tzedakah. Charity, that you should, just because Shemitah is coming and you know that he's not going to be able to pay you back, don't not give charity. And it also talks about slavery. What about slavery? That when you let your slave free, you're supposed to give him gifts as you send him free. The reason why these topics are all, I bunched them all together, and I think they're supposed to be all together, is that if there's a person who needs money, so there are three possible options for that person. There are three basic options. One option is that he takes out a loan from you, and that's where Shemitah comes in. Another option is he doesn't take out a loan, but you just give him tzedakah. And another option is he sells himself into slavery. Nowadays, you have another option of the government can redistribute all of the wealth. The Torah does believe in some kind of a tax. We do have Maaser Ani, we do have Matnas Aniyim. But that said, I'm not going to, with that, I'm going to go away from politics. But the idea is that the Torah is giving us a construct for a person who needs money and how to deal with them. And there's a slavery way to deal with it. You know, obviously, it's a humane slavery, which he spoke about in Parshas Mishpatim. There's a tzedakah way to deal with it, and there's a halva, there's a loan way to deal with it. But all of that is discussed in Section 8. Section 9 is Kedushas Bechor, that the Bechor has to be consumed in Eretz Yisrael. And number 10, finally, is Aliyah L'Regel. With that Aliyah L'Regel, we have all of the Shlosh Regalim, and there's a mitzvah to go to Yerushalayim during the Regalim. Okay, so just really, I want to speak about some of the questions that I presented in the Parsha preview, and this will explain all the bunch of the, like, a bunch of seemingly random topics. We have Meiser Sheni, we have Shemitah, we have Kasher. So I want to talk about all these things, and hopefully we'll just spend a few minutes doing that. So I'm just going to present the questions that I said in the Parsha preview, and then we'll try to answer some of them. So the first question, again, was, why are we referencing Haribol and Hargrizim now if that's not even happening now, and we're not even going to be talking about it now? Okay, that was the first question. Second question that I put in the Parsha preview, you might have noticed that there, we spoke about Avodah Zarah. We said that you're going to go into Eretz Yisrael, you're going to destroy all the Avodah Zarah. Then we spoke about the laws of Karbanos, and then we went back to defense against Avodah Zarah, like the Ir Hanidachas, the false prophet, and the Mesis. So the question that I put in the Parsha preview was, why are the Karbanos, why was that stuck in the middle of the Avodah Zarah topics? We have Avodah Zarah, it's like a sandwich between Avodah Zarah, Karbanos, and Avodah Zarah again. So again, destroy all the Avodah Zarah when you get into Eretz Yisrael. This is how you do the Karbanos. You do it by Makom Asher Yevchar. And then, here's how you could defend yourself against the Avodah Zarah. So that's the second question that I presented. And the third was just a more broad question. Why are Kashrus, Meiser, Shemitah, Aliyah L'Regel, why are all these things discussed here? One answer that we could already say is we're talking about the focus on the centrality of Yerushalayim. That is one possible theme. I think there's another theme that's hiding in there as well. So in terms of, so let's go back to that first question. Haribol Hargrizim. Moshe Rabbeinu references that bris. So again, why are we talking about that now? So I think very, very simply, the answer that you might have to say is maybe there really is no interruption, I suggested, we're not going to hear about this again until three parshios from now. Maybe you could say on some level that really since Re'eh is all about looking forward, the time that they're going into Eretz Yisrael, so Parshas Re'eh, since it's bringing us in that direction, we can suggest that really all of this is an introduction to what's going to happen in Kisavo. You're going to go into Eretz Yisrael, this is what he's saying now, and you're going to have to be ready. And when you go into Eretz Yisrael, one thing you have to remember is you can't do Avodah Zarah. And then when we actually get to Kisavo, we're going to talk about the specific parameters of that covenant, but everything right now is introduction to that. So with that said, that already gives us a window into what's going to be from Re'eh and going forward. Everything from now going forward is going to be what's going to happen when you get into Eretz Yisrael. We're going to see Parsha Shoftim next week also has a lot of preparation. You know, we're going to talk about having a melech. That's going to be in Parsha Shoftim. That melech is only relevant in Eretz Yisrael. So the idea there is that everything that we're doing now going forward should touch on that theme of, okay, what's going to happen when we get into the land. Okay, fine. So, in terms of the Avodah Zarah Karbanos sandwich, we have Avodah Zarah, Karbanos, Avodah Zarah. So, I was thinking that maybe this could actually speak to the famous shita of the Rambam about why we have Karbanos in the first place. Is anyone familiar with the Rambam? The Rambam, in Or Devukim, he talks about why do we have Karbanos? Does anyone know what does the Rambam say? Why do we have a Karbanos at all? So, I think everyone essentially agrees that's what they do. But the Rambam has a very specific thing. In fact, the Rambam says it's about a lot of mitzvos. The reason for a lot of mitzvos, the Rambam says, including Karbanos, he says it's to weed us away from Avodah Zarah. The Ramban is very much against this. He says, Adam Rishon and Hevel and Kayim, they brought Karbanos and they didn't have Avodah Zarah. That's the Ramban's raya against the Rambam. But it could be a possible answer for the Rambam is maybe Kodem Matan Torah, there was a basis for Karbanos before Avodah Zarah was around. But after, maybe we didn't need Karbanos, but because there was Avodah Zarah in the world, maybe we still need Karbanos. But the point is that the Karbanos might be stuck in the middle of the Avodah Zarah topics, because maybe it's one with the Avodah Zarah topics. Well, you know, a part of your defense against Avodah Zarah is Karbanos. That, okay, there's this taiva, maybe, or there's this draw towards Karbanos. Hashem says, no, there's a way, if you want to serve something, there's a way to do it. You serve Hashem, b'makom asher yivchar, you know b'amos, know avodah zarah, and do everything that way. Pasha Pshat, if you just look at the flow of the Chumash says that you're going to destroy all the avodah zarah, and in the same land that you're destroying the Avodah Zarah from, that's the Makom HaShrei Yivchar. I want you to serve Hashem there. And he says it's part and parcel with the topic. He's talking about how to serve Hashem as opposed to the idols that are in Eretz Yisrael. Once we're talking about what not to do, you know, what to destroy, and then how to actually serve, if you want to serve Hashem, if you have that spiritual leaning to serve something, then we get to, okay, now once we've destroyed all of the Avodah Zarah, and once we talk about how to serve Hashem properly, now how do you build up your guard again? And that's when we get to the defense against the Avodah Zarah. How, okay, don't listen to Amesis, make sure you kill Amesis, and kill a Navi Sheker. Don't follow the cultures of other nations, Ir Hanidachas, and now that's all of the defense to that. So one of the questions that I actually did not put in the Parsha preview, when we talk about not cutting yourself or making bald spots, what does that have to do with anything? That's pretty random. So the Baal Tzurim and the Ramban, they both suggest that this is just connected to the Avodah Zarah topic. The Baal Tzurim of all Rishonim, he says that he gives two connections to Avodah Zarah. He said although they would cut themselves or make bald spots for the dead, so the Baal Turim explains that they would actually also, if Avodah Zarah was destroyed, they would cut themselves for that too. They would mourn over their Avodah Zarah. And the Baal Turim also says that one way to worship Avodah Zarah was actually cutting yourself and making bald spots. So according to the Baal Turim, and they're in bonds to something similar, they suggest connections to Avodah Zarah. Rav Hirsch has a really interesting suggestion. He connects the cutting, the mourning, cutting yourself in mourning. He connects it to Mesis and Nevi Sheker, and I'll explain how he does that. He says that there's a fundamental connection between the Nevi and the Mesis and the death of a loved one. There are certain interpersonal relationships that are very valuable. If there's somebody who might be an established Nevi, and you find that he's a Nevi Sheker, it's going to be very hard to go against him. The Mesis that the Chumash describes, Moshe says, it might be your brother, it might be your sister, it might be your parents. They might try to make you do Avodah Zarah, and he says, don't listen to that Mesis. In fact, you have to kill the Mesis. Now, for a very intense interpersonal relationship, it's a very hard thing to think about, to do. The Sheva Levi was praised for doing this at the Chet Egel, that they killed their own brethren. But this is actually what we're being called upon to do here. And Hashem's, Moshe says right now, Banim Atem LaHashem. He says, you are children to Hashem. And that means that you can't cut yourself, and you can't be so broken to the point of cutting yourself in mourning for your loved ones, even if it's your parents, even if it's your siblings. He says, you can't be so broken to that point and forgetting that you have a relationship with Hashem. And that relationship with Hashem is the most central that comes before everything else. And Rav Hirsch says, if you have to kill a Mesis, if you have to kill your brother because they are a Mesis, you have to realize which relationship comes first. And he connects that to Banim Atem LaHashem Elokeichem. Okay. Now let's go back to... So why is kosher in here? So one thing you could say is, well, just because we spoke about not cutting yourself, and it's a reflection of Kiddushas Yisrael, is your non segula. So Kiddushas Yisrael is also associated with Machalos Asuros. So that could be one answer. Rav Hirsch actually says that this is going back to the Karbanos. That the Karbanos told us that you're allowed to eat meat. Now, what animals can you eat? You can't eat nevela. You can't eat certain. There's certain animals that you can't eat. So Rav Hirsch says it's connected to that. Let's go on to Meiser. So the Ibn Ezra explains that Meiser Shani. So why are we talking about Meiser Shani here? So the Ibn Ezra says that this and Bechor, Kiddushas Bechor, which is going to be discussed, he says these are all just limitations on how you eat things, right? So you have to eat an animal that's slaughtered properly, and you have to eat an animal that's kosher. But also, not just your food, not just your animal food, but your produce. Your Meiser Shani, there's a limitation. What do these limitations do for us? So Kedushas Bechor, Meiser, Kashas, all these things are visual reminders of Al Hashem's mastery over the world. You're not in charge of your own assets. And that takes us into Shemitah and Shemitah's Kesafim as well. Well, whether it's tzedakah, whether it's loans, or whether it's even slavery, you might own a slave. You're not actually the master. The master is actually Hashem, and all these mitzvos demonstrate that. You have money, guess what? You're not in charge of your own money. It doesn't mean the government's in charge of your money, but Hashem is in charge of your money. Shemitah means Hashem's in charge of your money. You have to forego your loans. Tzedakah means you have a chiyuv to give people money. It's your own money. You're taking it out of your pocket. And the same thing goes for your own eved. Your own eved, guess what? Komisha kona eved kona marava. You don't actually get an eved, because you get a master. And when you send him off, you have to give him your own things. You know, people talk about, that's actually interesting. People talk about how chaotic and archaic and anachronistic the Torah is, that the Torah was in support of slavery. They talk about how, and some people want to suggest, okay, yeah, because culturally back then it was accepted, today it's not accepted. I think it's very clear that if you look at the Torah's depiction of slavery, there's clearly a difference between the Shibud Mitzrayim and the Eved. Again, the Gemara says, if you are Kona and Eved for yourself, you're actually Kona Arav. Why would the Torah do that? So it's very interesting. I actually, of all places, I heard this on a Ben Shapiro podcast. Because someone asked him in his mailbag, someone asked him a question about the Torah's support of slavery, and Ben Shapiro was suggesting that he actually thinks the Torah was trying to weed people off of slavery. Because if you think about Chazal, what Chazal say, you're kone a rav for yourself, you're kone a master if you do this. And why would the Torah do that? Because the Torah wants you to realize, you know, that Hashem is the master of the world. I don't care what the social, financial, economic situation is, Hashem is the master. It doesn't matter. Okay, this guy's more wealthy and you work for him. But it doesn't matter. You have to send him away. And if he doesn't want to be sent away, guess what? After 7 years, he has to go. And otherwise, you pierce a hole in his ear. And Yovel reminds us that Hashem is in charge. But again, all of these things are reminding us of Hashem's mastery over the world. And the same is true for Aliyah LeRegel. But, okay, Baruch Hashem, I think that takes us through the entire Parsha. And again, just the themes of Re'iyah, something that I did not mention, is that if you look throughout the Parsha, listen for it when during Kriyas HaTorah. You're going to keep on hearing the term, what's the Lashon again? That you should do what's Yashar Be'inei Hashem. It keeps on saying that throughout the Parsha. You should do what's good in the eyes of God. I think it's very interesting that the Parsha is called Re'eh. Re'eh is telling us to look at things. But what are we supposed to look at? I think a bigger aspect of Re'eh is telling us how to look at things from Hashem's eye view. And so this idea of Re'iyah, seeing the evidence, seeing the reminders, Meiser, Shemitah, these are reminders that Hashem is in charge. And of course, the idea of the centrality of Yerushalayim, that you have you always have to have a place to look at. Yerushalayim is our reference point. That's the Re'iyah. You have to see things, and of course, there's a time not only where you have to see Yerushalayim, but there's a time where you have to be seen by Yerushalayim with Aliyah LeRegel. So we should be zoked all that. Just again to take us through all the sections. The beginning, number one, was Re'eh, see the bracha and klala that I'm going to place before you at Har Ebal Har Gerizim. Destroy all the avot. Number two, destroy all the avot Zara and the Avodah Zara centers. Three, all the rules of Karbanos, the real center for Avodah in Yerushalayim. Number four is all defenses against Avodah Zara when it comes to the not taking the cultures. There's Navi Sheker, the Mesis, Yaron Nidachas. Then there's the Banim Atem Hashem. Number five and is to not cut yourself. Remember that Yaron Am Kadosh, Yaron Am Segula. Number six is the Hilchos Kashrus. Number seven is the Halachos of Meiser. Number eight is the laws surrounding your money and society, Shemitas Ksafim, Tzedakah, slavery. Number nine is Kedushas Bechor. And number ten, finally, is Aliyah LeRegel. Mirat Hashem, we will pick up with Parshas Shoftim. Oh, yeah.